Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cool Down. And it's definitely a cool down tonight because it's flipping cold outside. It is flipping freezing outside. Nick, I don't even know how he's there right now. He's probably got a little heater there by his desk. But how are you guys doing? Wanga, how are you doing?
Doing so well today. It was a good weekend. Good weekend for me. Got Vinicius making things so much better on the ER. No, that was very good. So yeah, I can't complain, man.
Nick, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Just trying to keep warm. Just got back from Pretoria. My feet are frozen, but we'll survive. We'll survive. We're here to talk about a good weekend of football in general. Not so good for Claudio, but good for people to sort of enjoy. So yeah.
Yeah, Nick, and also you guys got a 3-1 victory on the weekend. So obviously, I think as the playoff score, we probably will touch on it at some point in time. But yeah, I saw that you guys did get a 3-1 victory, which is great. Claudio, how are you doing, man? Any sort of hangover of, you know, sadness, or I don't know, which one is it?
I'm happy. I'm good now. I don't think straight after the game I wasn't very good, but I'm very good now. Also, I find it very funny to see the smile on Wonga's face and all the noise you were making over the weekend. So that's the sign that my team's doing all right, the fact you're getting so excited about these sort of things.
No, so definitely, man. And I think, you know, a team success obviously will get a lot of hate from rivals, you know. So I think, it's only fair, you know what I mean. Good evening to Louis there in the comment section. Thanks for tuning in as always, guys. But yeah, guys, if you are watching the show, please do comment. Throw a comment there, guys. Whatever you guys think about the weekend's football, especially, you know, we've had the Champions League final, the UEFA Champions League final, the CAF Champions League final, and also we had Nottingham Forest also getting promoted, guys. So just bring your comments, guys, as we go along during the show, guys. So, you know, without further ado, we are going to start with scenes in Paris. Real Madrid have now won their 14th Champions League title, which is double the next best team. So that's quite impressive, you know. And I think we're going to start it from the angle of Real Madrid first, and then we're going to go into the Liverpool side of things first. So I think, you know, let me go to Wonga, because Vinicius obviously scored the winning goal, and I know Wonga's predictions was a 3-2 victory to Real Madrid. So Wonga, what do you think of Real Madrid's performance on the day, and just them obviously winning their 14th trophy?
Yeah, look, it was good. I think in the end you said Thibaut Courtois did his job very well. He kept it clean from Madrid, and I mean that actually gave them the opportunity to actually win the game, because now Madrid go there and they score one goal. I think they had, a fair amount of chances, but yeah, Liverpool definitely had more chances, the better chances, you would say, judging by the way Thibaut Courtois saves the ball. The amount of times Thibaut Courtois saves it, but Madrid winning it the way they did it. And I thought, like I said before, I honestly don't know how they were going to do it. But I just felt that Madrid were going to win it. And that's why I said 3-2. I didn't even know if they were going to score many goals. If they weren't, just gave a scoreline for that sake. And they, it literally did it again. Ancelotti, I don't know how he did it, but they got through it. Not to say they played poorly. I think they did have moments where they did put Liverpool under a lot of pressure. And I mean, that's where they got their goal from. But yeah, in the end, they won it. And kept things nice and, you know, nice and easy towards the end of the season, like a true cool down.
And Wonga, I watched back the show that you guys had on Thursday, and I know one of the comments that you made was that, you know, that if the only way Real Madrid were going to win is if they score first, You know, you didn't see them winning if Liverpool had scored first, and that's a comment that you made, and obviously stay true. The fact that you know, they scored first, and they're the ones who got the result on in the end. But no, Nick, what are your thoughts on the final itself? You know, I think Liverpool obviously had more shots on targets than Madrid, but you know they couldn't get the ball in the back of the net.
I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch much of the game. We were very, very busy here. We had about 200 people watching the game. I was highly disappointed because 75% of the bar left after the game because they were all supporting Liverpool. So, I was rooting for Liverpool from a business perspective. But, you know, I was just obviously looking at it. I saw the highlights, and as Wonga's mentioned, you know, Thibaut Courtois, man of the match. On another day, Liverpool go on and win that game comfortably. I think Ancelotti has proven, similar to like a Jose Mourinho, you know, he can win finals. It doesn't necessarily have to be the best team to lift the trophy, and he's proven that he's still one of the GOATs of managers of all time. He's delivered another trophy for Real Madrid, and you know he's actually put Spain or the Spanish league back on the map. Because if another English team went and won it, you know it was going to be a long road for the Spanish teams to try and challenge again. So well done to Real Madrid. I think it was a little bit disappointing, especially you know going from the sort of hype of potentially winning a quadruple from Liverpool to you know unfortunately losing that title to Man City in the fashion that they did, and then to lose the game against Real Madrid in the end was unfortunate. So but you know this is football, this is why we love it. The best teams don't always win, so well done to Real Madrid.
And Philo, just to add a little bit there to what Nick is saying, I mean, looking at Madrid, you know, we'll all say that, you know, it's not really it's not the best Madrid team. We can agree on that. In terms of names, but Madrid have knocked out, they took out PSG. I think, if you guys are correct me if I'm wrong, it was from the last 16. I mean, they've taken out PSG, they've taken out the Chelsea, they've taken out Man City, and then they've taken out Liverpool. Those four are the other four teams that if they said there were four teams to win it, those would have been the four, and Madrid wouldn't have been included in those four, you know. And Madrid have taken them all out, all, and scored six against City. So, I think Madrid, if you look at it like from there, they're definitely well deserved. They had the toughest route to get there, and they took it nicely.
I just want to acknowledge Sam in the comment section. How you doing, Sam? Thanks for your comments there. I won't forget your name. I recognize you. And then there's Warren as well. Warren as well in the comments. Madrid and United clearly train their keepers with the same people behind the scenes. They both used to play for Atletico Madrid, so the training they got it there at Atletico Madrid. So that's what happened there. But yeah, coming to now our Liverpool fan on obviously on the show, I think I need to obviously get his perspective on you know, from a Liverpool perspective, what could have been you know done better in terms of the game and also some of the defensive frailties from a Liverpool standpoint of a VVD and a Trent. Claudio, what were your thoughts of the game in general, and you as a Liverpool fan, your feeling after the game and during the game? Did you always have the hope that you guys could get an equaliser at some point in time, or what were your thoughts there? Or you just thought you guys could play for 180 minutes and you could never score past the keeper because you're just having a blinder?
Yeah, it was a rollercoaster of emotions. I think just the delayed kickoff was one of the things that already set something off. And I was like, well, this is unusual. This is something for the players to pretty much contend with as well. I mean, obviously, a lot of drama happening outside of the stadium, and that's a whole other topic. I think the French Prime Minister has come out now saying it's Klopp's fault, which is ridiculous. They had one funnel where they funneled in 35 or 25,000 Liverpool fans, where three people were checking people for tickets, and then they had two turnstiles for people coming in, plus all the Liverpool fans were getting pickpocketed, tickets were getting stolen, and people jumping the fences, tear gas, etc. So that delay happened. And whether or not you know if the players are knowing that what is happening outside is affecting them, whether or not that's the case, that's something to contend with. But both sets of players were delayed, and that always affects the mental psyche of players. And I think even before the game started, I was looking at Mane's face and Salah's face. And Mane looked a bit like he was soaking it in, but it looked like it was a really, really big occasion for him. And it was quite interesting for me as I was thinking, this is the fourth final, technically third final. It's the last cup of the season. They've been pretty much battle-worn. They should be comfortable with going into this. But it looked like it was a huge deal for them. That was off the bat. And then as the game went on, it was fairly comfortable for Liverpool. It was like, it was me watching my side going, wow, this is, my team is the best team here. They're in this final. They're gonna walk away with this. And there were some fantastic moments. And I think that Mane chance, I'm talking a lot about Mane, and we're going to talk a lot about him later. But the Mane chance was the one that stands out for me, because he's completely isolated by three players. He creates the space. And as he hits it, I'm running across the room. My hands are like pumping in the air. I'm like, this is a guaranteed goal. And that save, when I saw that save, that's when I went, holy shit, we're going to be in for this. And as the game went on, obviously that incident towards the end of the second half with Benzema, and I think that's where it changed. Which was crazy, because Liverpool had possession, they were creating chances, and then all of a sudden, Benzema gets the ball, and there was a moment of panic. Yeah, they put it back in the net there, and I suppose some people are going to say Liverpool are fortunate, whatever the rules are, the goal didn't stand. But it was after that moment, just before half-time, it completely turned things on its head. Because it was almost like a reminder to the Liverpool defense going, hey, Real Madrid, get back in there. Because they're not really getting tested, but as soon as they get their chance, those legs were wobbly and they were shaky. And that's what happened. They had that one chance, which was, I mean, we're going to comment about the defending, it was very poor, but they had that one chance. And as soon as they conceded that, we were just, I mean, my head was just like, I don't think they're going to score this. And obviously, time after time after time, you just see Courtois. And I mean, we can talk about Madrid in this sort of, ridiculous run that they went on, and yes, for the story, they deserve it. 14th sort of Kings of Europe, 14th title. But Courtois on the day, it's almost like he had a huge point to prove, and he said so. He said, the English disrespect me. I got all these tweets, 100%. And I've come out just to remind people, and that's the difference. And I think when you're looking at a player like Salah, who's talking before a game, and you're looking like Courtois, who wasn't talking, and now he's doing the talking afterwards.
On the field,
My goodness. I don't know. It's just the keeper on the day, and there's nothing you can do. And there's all this noise, by the way, about Liverpool playing in all these finals, not scoring goals. Now there's a problem with Liverpool. I mean, I can think about the finals where Liverpool created clear chances, more than enough chances to score. They've just been unlucky. There's nothing more to say to that. I don't know if anyone else wants to add on that, or they think there's some sort of...
I think, Claudio, you know how football is, you know what I mean? When things are going very well for a side, right, we're obviously going to heap praise on the side, right? But when things go wrong, we're like, hey, man, actually, let's think about it, guys. These guys won on penalties against Chelsea twice, FA Cup and Carabao Cup, and in this game, they didn't score. So that's what happens, is because they've lost, we think about these things. If Liverpool had won the game on penalties, bruh, you best believe no one's going to talk about the fact that Liverpool didn't score any goals in the finals. But it's just because they've lost. Now people are now starting to think about, oh, man, actually these guys failed to score. What was wrong? And you guys did create chances. You know, I think that Carabao Cup one, I think both Chelsea and Liverpool should have probably scored some goals in that game. You know, Chelsea were unlucky with some offsides, but which were borderline. And yeah, this one, you know, you guys are going to face a goalkeeper sometimes who on his day is, you know, five-star performance. You know, you can't do anything about that. You guys tried. That save that off Mane's shot, like, that was an amazing save. You know, he literally flicked it with the tips of his finger and it hit the post. You know, those are the small margins where literally it just went the other way. It could have hit him. It could have hit him and gone into the goals as well. You know,
just
those small margins. Yes. People are going to focus on the fact that you guys haven't scored in the finals, but you guys have had a great season as a whole. And I think obviously now it comes to the part where now we talk about the end of the season only with the domestic cups. You know what I mean? And this is, you know, the part where now we're going to be asking questions about, you know, how much of a success was the season? Because in all honesty, Liverpool would trade the two domestic cups for one of the other trophies that they didn't win, for instance. Rather, win a Champions League over two domestic cups or win a Premier League over two domestic cups. Do you agree with that?
Me personally, I suppose I've always got a soft spot for the Champions League. That's the one I love. That's the one because I've been there a couple of times and there's no one can always, like, you can win the league domestically, but it's the European Championship. You're the best in the world technically if you win that one according to the competition. So that's the one I like. But I do think, look, Klopp never won the FA Cup, but it was nice for him to take it seriously and go after it. He normally just puts in the reserve. So, I mean, for him to achieve that and for him to give players like Mane the opportunity to win everything for Liverpool, I suppose it's a sort of double-edged sword in this case. But I suppose he's done that now. So it's something to tick off the list and we can come again, we can go back. And I mean, it's ridiculous when you're looking at this season. 63 games, they broke the record in scoring 147 goals. It's so sad that it's so close, but not there. I mean, if they get those sort of the other games, the Premier League goes their way, the Champions League goes their way, this side becomes the greatest ever Liverpool side, and now suddenly it's just two domestic cups, and the conversation's like, ah. But I will say that Jurgen Klopp is an incredible manager, an incredible man, and this is why he gets the success that he gets, because straight after the game, you can see the players are, I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't stick around to see all of the players, but I saw one or two images, because I just got into my car and I drove home, just like all the players, all the fans at Nick's pub there, or at the XP Arena. But I will say what Jurgen Klopp said immediately in the press conference afterwards was saying, we will be back. We're going to be back next year. Not even back. We will be back next year. And the next day he had organized a parade. And all of a sudden I'm bummed and I go on and I'm looking at the parade and I'm going, wait a minute. This guy's really great because it's a reminder that this is football and we do have a good squad and he's prepared to go for it again. It's we've won what we've won and we move forward again. So I suppose it's going to be there. And I suppose the fact that it's missing, there's going to be some real hunger for the next season. But, yeah, I don't know in terms of what you guys think in terms of it's a failure for Liverpool.
I think if you look at it, you know, it's a very tough one, and it just shows you, like Claudio was saying, how fine the margins are, because it could have been a situation where Liverpool are sort of crowned the best team ever to have existed. But if you had to compare their season now with Man City and you actually look at the end result, you know, no one's going to ask about how many games Liverpool played or how close Liverpool came. Man City, on paper, probably had the better season, you would say, winning the league. I think that's up for debate.
But I've got a question there then. So, like, in this instance, they've gone for everything, right? You could argue, had they not gone for everything, had he rested during the FA Cup or skipped out the League Cup, maybe focus primarily on the Champions League. He gets that, and all of a sudden this conversation's like, oh, it's a good season.
You can argue that, but at the end of the day, in 10 years' time, people are going to say that Man City won the league and, you know, Liverpool won two cups. You know, that's unfortunately what football's about. And I understand fully where you're coming from. I think Liverpool have had an incredible season, but I think, you know, Klopp is a very brave man and he'll put on a very brave face, but I know for a fact that he would, and just from a coaching perspective, he would trade those two for one of the other two. I can guarantee you.
More
That's
prestigious.
Just my opinion.
And
we must have a healthy debate here, Claudio. That's just my opinion. You know, you feel the way you feel, but I just think if you look back at the season in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, an incredible achievement. But they're going to look at the honours. And, you know, arguably you would say winning the league is probably a tougher feat than winning a cup competition simply because of the amount of games that you have to play. But you also have to look at it from the other side of the coin. No two teams have both cleared 90 points consistently like these two teams have. So, you know, did Pep actually, you know, do something great by fending off a challenger like Liverpool? But you know, if Courtois doesn't have that game, you know, you might be talking about a completely different story. So like I said, it is fine margins, but I do think Liverpool and Liverpool fans in general would have preferred one of the trophies over these
100%,
two.
100%,
look, yeah,
no doubt,
I mean,
about it.
No one's disputing that. I think that is what it is. Look, you don't always get what you want or what you expect you deserve. You get what you get. And I think from my side, when I'm looking at it, the case that it is, we got that. And that's still more than most. When we talk about the quadruple, unfortunately, the quadruple isn't four trophies. The quadruple for us is the inverse. We only lost four games the entire season. That's what we lost. Madrid lost four times throughout the course of the Champions League. and they are crown champions.
Yeah, that's football.
That's how it works.
It is crazy. So, it is crazy.
Claudio, can you answer this question from Sam there, please? Obviously, he's asking, do you expect Liverpool to replicate a similar success next season?
I do not. I think just based on everything Nick's saying now, if we're going to weigh it up, and if Jurgen Klopp's looking at it from my manager cap perspective, I'm going to say, well, if I've got the squad here, let me push hard for the league, or let me push hard for one of them instead of trying to go for all of them. So I think that will be the focus. I think he will give the other players, he's got a squad now where he'll let them focus and do what they did pretty much from the League Cup and FA Cup. If they get it, they get it, but the focus won't be that. And I think, book the hotel, damn straight. And I love Istanbul, by the way, gentlemen. Finals in Istanbul, Turkey, beautiful place. I'm going.
I was close to going
to Paris. Also,
better on the pocket for a South African as well, going to Istanbul than Paris. So at least I think maybe Claudia can maybe book something there. And then Warren is just touching on the.
Listen, Cello, Man United aren't going to be there, man. So you're just going to go there to represent Goal Lounge. Don't get excited.
So, Warren highlighting the fact.
Or Arsenal for that fact, Wonga.
Or you for that matter. Maybe Matt will surprise us and go all the way like he did in Madrid. Shout out to Jason also for being in the comments there. Aman as well there. Sam likes the honest reply, Claudio, which is always good, I think, obviously. But guys, just to wrap up this whole conversation about the Champions League final and what's kind of subsequently happened after the final and the fact that, you know, the news came out that Sadio Mane is to leave. Wonga, I just want to get your thoughts on this in terms of, you know, Mane leaving. Do you think it's the right time for him to leave?
Yeah, look, I think he's sitting there saying, does he finish off his contract here does he finish off his career here with the team that he loves, or is there still more stuff that he would like to pursue? And I mean, if you're looking at his age, you're looking at, he's probably at the peak of his career. He's already won everything that you can with Liverpool. Then now, you know, let's go try out something new while he's still at his peak. You know, I mean, that's what most of these guys are doing. And it's, for me, it's nice. It is nice to see, you know, teams like Liverpool, you know, pushing other teams. I mean, that's the only way other teams get better is, you look at the, you're only as good as your opponent, you know, and Liverpool is a strong team. They pushed Man City all the way and you get a nice finish to the season. It is kind of sad, you know, to see, you know, that maybe he's not going to be in the Premier League next year. Probably won't be because he's already touched that. But for him, I mean, it's nice to see that, you know, he's pushing himself, you know, and, you know, I would say, I think, you know, he can fit in definitely well, with any team that he goes to overseas, and I wish him the best, but I think definitely right, if in terms of time, I think it's the right time to leave.
I think it's an absolutely pathetic decision by him. He's playing at one of the best teams in the world, and he's going to go to a league where it's guaranteed that you win the title. Yeah, but come on, man. Come on. If it is about money, then great. Good luck to him. But he's part of probably the strongest front three in world football. And he's going to trade going to Bayern to go play in a farmers league. You know, obviously that's a very loose term, but essentially going to a fucking, a farmers league where, you know, he can play against the best players in the world in the Premier League and challenge himself. I don't know.
Give him 300,000 pounds a week. Give him 300,000 pounds a week.
Newcastle can
Nick, you.
Yeah, I'll give him that.
A week.
That's got something to do with it. I think that contract sort of conversation definitely. I mean, Settle's already, you know, going ching 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 here, and I think it's definitely.
It's 100,000 pounds, guys. This guy should be.
But this
be,
is the interesting thing.
Yes, good money. Yes, that also.
And all the chat.
I'm not hating on Liverpool. Liverpool's got a wage structure which is amazing and it's great and all. I'm just thinking about the footballer who's from Senegal, who's thinking about his future here.
Well, look, you're right. You're both right. Nick's right. I would love him to stay. Like I've said a couple of weeks ago, Mane is my man. He's the guy I love seeing in a Liverpool shirt. And I remember seeing him play for Southampton, scoring a goal against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge that I got to watch. And from that day, then Liverpool signing for the 30 million. And he was the start of the Klopp sort of era. And look, before all these other guys came, Liverpool weren't winning games when Mane wasn't playing. That's the thing. And he's gone through this and he goes about his business quietly. And he always says he sacrifices a lot. And I think it dawned on him through all the conversation about Salah and all the effort they're putting in on Salah's contract. I think after a while, I think that does kind of weigh on you, especially when you know what you've done. Just knocked the man out of the AFCON, going to the World Cup, doing all the things that you've done. And I thought it was quite weird. I think someone asked me last week or a week before, a couple of weeks earlier, saying, what do you think is going to happen here? And I said, look, the one thing I'm worried about is losing one of them. But the thing is, Mane wasn't saying anything. And that's always one of two things. It's either because, you know, this is done and dusted, something's happened behind the doors, it's sorted, or it's because the man's trying to quietly sneak out of the door. And I think I think to your point there, I think he is, I mean, Liverpool fans appreciate him, but I suppose when you're looking 30 years old, pushing 31, he's got a couple of years left, he needs to try and maximize what he can maximize. To your next point, he should be staying. But I mean, he's been in the Premier League longer than most. If you got to look at it like that, he's Southampton.
I want to bring a question that Scooby, shout out to Scooby. Scooby's a Real Madrid fan, so I know he's very happy, but you know, he said vamos Real Madrid, but just a question he just raised here. He's saying, how do you justify Ox getting more than Sadio Mane?
So get rid of Ox and give Sadio his money. Simple. It makes sense. The man
that
scores,
does make
he's
sense.
In
that. That does make just sense. I would do that. Done. He's Ox leaving already.
Ox yes, played how many games this season?
It doesn't matter. The man was good.
No, but what I'm saying to you, it doesn't make sense to me business-wise. Give him what he wants. Give him a 2.5-year, 3-year deal, whatever it needs to be. And you guarantee goals with the guy. He's still fit. He's still strong.
Yeah. I think a player like Mane, right, should have, because obviously, what, it's been 6 years at Liverpool, right? I think, Claudio, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, it's 6 years, right?
Yeah,
so
6 years.
A player like Mane, you do, like, you obviously get him under the contract that you got him on from Southampton, and then after 4 years, right, when you see there's still 2 years, you renegotiate his contract, right, and add another 2 years to the 2 years that are left, then that would take him to kind of like 33, but give him more wages to kind of keep him still happy, you know what I mean, also to kind of retain the value, you know what I mean, where maybe like...
So
the
finance
now,
guy, ladies and gentlemen, he knows what he's talking about.
Where about now, he's got one more year left in his contract, obviously then it's like you might lose him for a free, but also I think that Liverpool won't stand in his way. Liverpool will say, no, cool, let's get the money for him, and let's try and reinvest elsewhere within the squad. You know, obviously you guys have gotten a Jota and a Diaz over the last 18 months or so, and you can maybe just try and get another focal point, a number 9 or something along those lines. So,
but the Diaz thing though, the Diaz thing's an interesting one, because obviously they're saying Tottenham were going in after him, but there must have been something that happened in Jan or the conversation knowing that this was on the horizon, that they already brought Diaz in to prepare for this move. That's just something I'm seeing from
us. But for me, even with Diaz, guys, Liverpool are weaker losing money.
100%.
They need to replace him.
He's been their best player since AFCON. Best player.
And for me, the only player you can replace him with, and they're not going to change their model, is Lewandowski. There's no one else unless he hits the ground running. But I don't see them.
I was going to say that. I was speaking to someone saying on the weekend, one of the guys I was watching with us, and he literally said, why not look at Lewandowski? And this was before any talk about money. And you know, when we're talking about not scoring in finals, that's one thing Liverpool haven't had over the last couple of years, or player like that under Jurgen Klopp, is a sort of Lewandowski. Like a Benzema, for example. Do you think, like, a Lewandowski comes to Liverpool, that's a game changer?
Will you take the wage?
Oh, for me, you challenge for the league. You challenge... You go a lot closer, I mean, if you can't even go closer than that, to winning the league and the Champions League, 100%. And, you know, I would change the model simply because you'll get instant success within the next two, three years and sustained success for that period. You know, he's a goal scorer. Even at his age, he'll bang in the goals. He'll bang in the goals. So, you know, they'll probably have to change their model slightly to accommodate a player like him. However, I think business-wise, I don't know. I fear for Liverpool losing a player of his quality. They did sustain the pressure on Man City and in the, well, obviously the Champions League was afterwards, but without Mane and Salah, and he came up with a plan B. If that was to be for a significant period, I don't know if they would be able to, because Mane is close to irreplaceable. Just with what he's done in the last 6 years for Liverpool. So I would be sad for him to leave for the Premier League, like just from a neutral perspective. I can't even begin to believe what Liverpool fans would start to think if he's definitely out the door. But if I'm Klopp, I'm going to the management and saying, listen guys, let's keep this guy for another 2-3 years. Give him what he wants. He's going to deliver.
That's true. That's true. He's a fit person. He's a fit footballer. You know what I mean? He looks after himself. I think obviously the performances that he's given post AFCON, you know, I think have been obviously amazing. You know, I feel he's been Liverpool's best player in the second half of the season. Wonga, just to wrap up on your side, you know, do you think, obviously Nick is saying it will be a tremendous loss. Well, what do you think on this matter?
No, Nick, I agree with Nick, and I agree with, what everyone is saying in terms of, he's lost to Liverpool, but, I think as well that, it's also a pity, he won't be going for a free, and I mean, if he was going for a free, I think definitely, you know, he'd get a team like Barcelona, trying to go in for him. I'm surprised I don't see, Madrid going for him as well. But yeah, it's going to Spain as well. Not to Spain, to Bayern. I thought not the greatest move for him, but I would have definitely preferred him to be, in a team like Barca or Madrid. That's where I would have preferred him to be if he lives at Liverpool. But yeah, it's his choice. He's got, people he needs to feed. So yeah, good luck to him.
So no, we'll see. No, we'll see what happens there. Yeah, guys, I think, we've said enough on Liverpool. I think obviously, Claudio's probably like, yeah, guys, I understand my team lost and everything and I'm losing one of my favorite players. Let's just, you know, talk about something else. you know, we did have a championship playoff final, between Huddersfield and Nottingham Forest on Sunday. Forest won 1-0. So Forest will be back in the Premier League after 23 years of being out of the Premier League. Last time they were in the Premier League was 1999. And Wonga will not like this, but we have another team in the Premier League that's won the European Cup / Champions League that's back in the Premier League, and Arsenal haven't. You know what I mean? So we've got another Champions League winning side back in the Premier League, and you know, one more than Arsenal. But Nick, let me touch on you, man. I think I'm gonna touch on you because, I'm not saying Forest is like Newcastle, right? But I'm saying that Forest is like Newcastle in terms of the fact that it's a historic club. It has won a couple of trophies, obviously in the English top division, and also won in Europe as well. So what do you think it does for the league having a Nottingham Forest back in the Premier League?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I actually remember that season vividly when they were getting relegated. I think they've been relegated on one of the lowest points total in 1999 in Premier League history. I think barring Derby County with 10 points. And I think in terms of the history, you know, I not many people will know this, but they got promoted in 1977. I might be off by 1 or 2 years. Yeah. They won the league in 78, qualified for the Champions League in 79, won the Champions League in 79, and won the Champions League in 1980. So that will never ever happen again. So that sort of story will always live within English football and an amazing feat that Nottingham Forest did. So I think it's good for the league to have, you know, proper teams with a bit of culture, you know, that have produced things over the years. But it's always going to be a difficult task to stay in the league, especially for Nottingham Forest. You know, the gap between the top and the top teams and the rest is quite significant. So I think their job now is to devise a plan to stay in the league and try and sustain that. You know, learn from your Brentfords, learn from the likes of your your Burnleys, if you want to look at it, they stayed in the league for so long. and build it from there, you know. It will be disappointed if you see a team with so much history go up and then just go straight down after trying so hard to get back into the league. So it will be interesting. Let's good luck to them. You know, I saw a couple of the players, they said they were going to do a full Jack Grealish in terms of their celebrations. So let them enjoy it now. And I'm sure the hard work will commence at the end of June.
Yeah, no, that's true. Claudio, what do you think of Forest being back in the league? You know, I think it is a historic club, you know, and obviously they've got a good fan base as well.
Yeah, man, I'm stoked. You've touched on the fact that they have the European sort of final, winning sort of, they've got the star to their name. I love that. I love that we've got all these sort of historic clubs back in the Premier League. You got your Leeds, you got your Villas, you got now Nottingham Forest. I'm loving that. What I don't like seeing is your freaking yo-yo Norwich coming up. That I don't enjoy. They must stay down for a while. They must come up. Them and Burnley, they can take their time. So let's keep these teams and these clubs of pedigree in the Premier League. I do enjoy that. And also when Liverpool played them this season, I was quite impressed with the atmosphere and quite impressed with the fans. And I think I still tweeted or said something along the lines of these guys need to be up in the Premier League, and now they're there. So I'm looking forward to it. They're going to add something new, and they're going to be another Brentford. Let's see if Brentford are going to be able to stay up. But yeah, looking forward to this.
I think what was quite interesting with this whole Forest promotion is when Steve Cooper took over, I think it was at the end of September, they were second last, if I'm not mistaken, if not bottom. He took over from Chris Hughton. And yeah, got them into a position where they were challenging on the final day to take automatic promotion. They had to go the long route, and they finally did it. So good luck to them.
Nick, do you see this one? Selo, look at Pum's comment there.
Huh? I'm for match fixing and drug trafficking.
Yeah, you gotta read that out though, Selo. What about the people just listening to us?
Okay, so you're saying there is a probe against their owner for match fixing and drug trafficking. Wow, that's scandalous. That is definitely scandalous. I think it's something that we definitely need to look into. I didn't hear anything about that, but thanks for that, Booms. We'll definitely look into it and then see what is actually happening. But yeah, that's that. So guys, next season we'll have Fulham back in the Premier League. We'll have Bournemouth back in the Premier League, and we'll have Nottingham Forest back in the league as well, guys. And also, just to make Nick a bit angry, Sunderland are back in the Championship.
That's fine. I can still tell them to mind the gap, because there's still a significant gap between us and them. So it's been they had 4 years in League One. We had our fun. Let's see what they can do. You know, they probably will mount a challenge in the next couple of years, not immediately. You know, a lot of teams do have that. A couple of teams have done that back-to-back promotions. I think Leicester and Southampton did it. So yeah, let's see.
That's true. No, that's proper. And just to wrap up in terms of the Premier League, I just wanted to touch on this. I think just because on a Man United perspective. So Ralph Rangnick has left Man United, so he won't be doing the consultancy role. I just wanted to bring it up because you hire someone with a future a future role that they're going to fulfill, you know, and then when you part ways with that person, and it kind of raises some questions in terms of why has this happened, you know? So I think with this, and I've been obviously looking into it, reading some tweets and reading some information about it, I think the direction that Rangnick wants to take Man United in terms of the transfer policy, I think it's not the direction that United wanted to do. You know, he feels that there should be 8 or 10 players coming in and similar amount going out. You know, there was a tongue-in-cheek comment to say that, you know, he would probably sell Marcus Rashford, for instance. You know, that's just the, you know, type of thing. He's got a certain type of player that he wants to bring in. You know, there's players that he suggested to the board. He suggested that Man United sign a Zakaria from Borussia Gladbach, who end up going to Juventus. He suggested that Man United sign a Kamara, who's now gone to Villa. because it was going to be quite a cheap buy. He's also suggested that Man United look into Julian Alvarez, who's now gone to Man City. You know, the young Argentinian striker. So he suggested a couple of players to the board and saying, guys, you guys need to look at these players or this player, 1, 2, 3 players. You know what I mean? In terms of the model that he uses, you know, and all these players that he's suggesting are not expensive buys. You know, they kind of like reasonable buys in terms of that, you know, and everything. And I think he even tried to set up a meeting between Alvarez's agent and Man United, and Man United didn't take the meeting. So I think the meeting of the minds wasn't happening. And I think it leaves a lot of questions in terms of the strategy that we're going to obviously follow into the transfer window. But just in terms of transfers, is there anything on your side, guys, that's happening from your club's perspective? You know, Nick, I don't know what's happening in terms of a new contract.
I think our biggest signing at the moment, we got Ainsworth from Brighton. He's sort of been the mastermind of rejuvenating and reshaping the England national team at all levels, from women to youth to obviously the men's senior team. And that sort of bared its fruits now recently, obviously with the England national youth teams winning the World Cup, England getting to a Euro final, World Cup semi-final, and then he obviously has done a fantastic job at Brighton. So I think he's a massive coup to be our sporting director and sort of direct, you know, our ship and in which sort of direction we go. So that's exciting. I think it's going to be a busy summer for us. I think we'll sign about 5 or 6 players, a couple of outgoings as well, and let's see, maybe a top 7's on the horizon for us.
No, definitely. Let's see what happens. Wonga, any little news that you can probably throw our way?
Nah, I think for now, again, Arsenal, just like the matches they're chasing. And then I hear they're chasing Tielemans from the one who just stopped at Leicester.
I think he'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think Andrew, definitely.
He has so much quality to midfield.
He had skill there, yeah, and he can be a real leader there for that side.
He starts. And then, who else is there? Saliba. He says, Marseille are trying to sign him. They want him. But Arteta's saying that he actually wants Saliba back. He believes that he still believes that it was the right decision to take him away and then bring him back to the squad. I think he definitely will be a good addition. He starts. We've got Tomiyasu on the right, Gabriel in the middle. But if that, let's just say we're unable to sign Saliba and they end up keeping him, I would say then they should move Tomiyasu to the center back. He's proven that he's good at defending, and I think that would a lot solidify it. The other two, Ben White and Holding, must. Gabriel and Holding must fight for a position, and then they can buy a decent right back as well. I think that's what Arsenal should do with that. And I think Nketiah as well. I haven't seen if he's finished. I haven't seen if he signed that. And then the fans, I think the fans want Gnabry back. That's what the fans want. I've not seen. Yeah, Gnabry. They've been going
wild. Yeah, but when he goes back to Arsenal, surely like If he's available, would he not rather go? Yeah, would he not rather go to a City or a Liverpool or
a Madrid or a Madrid? Or a Madrid even. I've even heard of some rumors of Madrid.
Newcastle.
That'll be a better team. You're better team to go to be a Madrid than go back to Arsenal. The downgrade.
But he's I mean the only thing the fans are hoping on is because he's an Arsenal fan. I mean he spends a lot of his time there. And that's what they're hoping on. It's well known that he's an Arsenal fan. He loves Arsenal. He says he still watches the games. And I think that's what the fans are pushing for. So
you never know. Look,
you and all the Arsenal fans. This is what you said.
All the Arsenal fans.
You're not listening.
These are the same people that said They're going to finish third and above top.
You said, remember when Martin Odegaard came? I told you that he'd probably come back and sign. A lot of people say, Classic Astros, he'd never come here. He'd never come. What? Now he is signed, playing for our team, week in, week out.
Odegaard is a young man who needs game time. He's going to get game time now.
Wanga Saka, Wanga Saka.
How many people have done this? Ronaldo can go to any team he wants. He's still staying in Man United in Europa.
There's no section for Wanga rent today, man. Unfortunately, you know.
But Ronaldo has won everything he can in world football. So exactly. That argument doesn't. He just needs to win the Europa League and then he adds it.
These are Arsenal fans. Their logic is coming from all places. It's like a little wormhole. They'll find something there, bring it in there, take it there, chuck it. Guys, I've got a question quickly. So obviously the Mane chat, I see this morning Dembele coming to Liverpool possibly or whatever. They're looking at him as free. There are a couple of players end of the season are on free. So you got Suarez, you got Bale, you got Dybala, you got Dembele, you got Isco. Those are a couple just within Europe. I mean, out of those five, who would be a good signing for your club? Who would you take?
I would take Suarez in a heartbeat.
I would take Dembele.
The way
he's been playing since January. Let me just say the way he's been playing since January. The way he's been playing since he got made. The man has been a man. He got made in December, yeah. So since he got made in December.
He's not playing FIFA, being late for training anymore.
Man has been on fire. I think he's got the most assists in La Liga since December. He's been tearing it apart. Barcelona fans are actually, you know, when he actually gets on the ball, the new camp actually makes a noise. You know, they used to boo him a bit because of what was going on, and then his performances turned the way they see him. You know, they would kind of obviously cheer for him and stuff. He's hugely talented.
For me, like, he's a fantastic player. I just think he had a terrible attitude, and that's where my only concern would be. I mean, Nick's already touched on the fact that he's got injury issues, but I mean, that's where the professionalism side comes in. If he's going to be serious, he's going to be conditioned, he won't get injured. And if I'm looking at him coming to Liverpool hypothetically, look at what Liverpool did with their squad this season in terms of injuries, and they got a good fitness team. And we know Klopp really loves the guy. So if there's any manager that can turn a player, it could be him. But I don't know, it's still a bit of a gamble when you're replacing a Mane with him.
No, what do you think? It is a gamble, but on a free transfer, and maybe, I don't know, similar wages to what Mane was getting, plus £50,000 a week, maybe like £150,000, £200,000 a week. I think maybe a worthy gamble. But we'll definitely see. There'll definitely be more stories about what's going on in the transfer market. Just to bring it closer to home, guys. On Monday, Al Ahly went into a fortress in Casablanca, where it was unfair, guys. I don't know if you guys saw the atmosphere in Morocco, how crazy that atmosphere was. Like, it was just red. It was a sea of red. Yep. And Al-Ahli literally just had no chance playing against a team that was so determined playing at home. And then with that ended up winning 2-0, winning their third CAF Champions League. I don't know, Wanga, did you watch the game? What did you make of the game?
Look, I saw the highlights. I didn't watch the game, but the goals from, who was that? Is it Al-Mutaraj?
The first goal.
But even before that, when they hit the post, that was a rocket. Then the goal itself, oh my goodness me. I mean, it literally dunked straight to the, well, it did curve, but I mean, it came straight to the keeper, but it was just too much pace. It was too hot. And he put it in the back of the net. And I think, despite that crowd that Al Ahly had to go to, Peter's team has done enough to actually even win the game. You know, they put in a couple of chances themselves, but they just on the day. I think White Dad were more determined, to be honest with you. They were everywhere. They were everywhere. They were on them in the defending, in the attacking, and I think the goals themselves actually showed that. It was hectic. So well done to them.
I can imagine.
Pito had a few sour grapes there at the end, saying that the Champions League was organized very well for Wydad.
That sounds like him. That sounds like him.
You know, man, you'll never go quite to the sunset, man. You always have something to say, man. I think guys, they've won two Champions Leagues in a row, and then this would have been the third one in a row. But I just want to ask, guys. There's a journalist I follow, a South African journalist. He said that we shouldn't have European solutions for African football. You know, so what he meant by that is the fact that the two-legged tie thing stopped in about 2017, I think it was, and they moved to a one-leg final. So he feels that actually we should move back to a two-leg final. For CAF Champions League, because it's better suited to CAF Champions League. What do you guys make of that that assertion, Claudio?
What does that mean?
Going back to two legs instead of one leg.
Yeah, I think the statement is the correct one. I definitely think that. I think they must stop trying to say, because Europe does this, we need to do this. The different problems that need to be solved here, so how can you apply the same method? So I do think there's logic to that. And also, especially when you highlight the fact, Wonga, you've already touched on, you know, it was a sea of red. They were going for it. We know how important away fixtures are, home fixtures are, rather, here in Africa are. So it does make sense, unless it's really neutral, but it's never going to be neutral. So there's no hiding behind that. You know, there's always going to be someone who's going to pay something, who's going to manage to make it all of a sudden you host it at home like they did over the weekend. So I do think home and away makes it fair, because in that case, you know, there's no hiding behind that.
No, definitely. No, that's true. And a point here from Pooms, who makes the final on a Monday. Yeah, Pooms, I only realized on the day that the final was that day. I was still thinking that it's going to come on this coming Saturday, but, you know, that's African football for you. But apparently, the FIFA president needs to be at all continental finals, apparently. So he had to be at the Champions League on Saturday.
So they just moved it because the Champions League was the same weekend.
So the CAF Champions League was actually penciled in for Sunday.
Yes.
And it was moved a day later. So it was supposed to be UEFA Saturday, CAF Sunday, which would have made sense. And
I'm
flying from France to Morocco is not far. You would definitely
imagine the guy was like, "No, I needed a break on Sunday. I'm probably
exactly.
I need."
So,
you know what it was? The guy needed to deal with the incident that happened at the final there, and now he's like, oh, "Okay, no, I need 24 hours for my PAs to write up a statement anyway, and then I can have a nice bath with a glass of champagne in Paris." Imagine that, man.
Madness,
that's ridiculous.
Madness. But I think
Scooby's commented.
It comes to the mighty Pirates. Yeah, you're thinking as a Pirates fan, and not as a football fan. I think Peter needs to go into Europe. Do you guys think that Peter's time to go to Europe? For instance, you know, there have been some rumors linking him with the French league, possibly moving there. Do you think it's time for him to move on? And do you think he would do well in a French league?
I think he could potentially go. I think the French league might be a step too far right now. I could potentially see him going into like a Greece or a Turkey, and building his way up there. I mean, the support bases there are very, very similar to. Yeah, he probably was. He went to the Monaco.
he went to the Monaco Grand Prix. Yeah.
I think there's definitely an opportunity there, because if he can get one of those. You know, the fan bases in those two countries, in Greece and Turkey, is incredible. And you know, he's handled a fan base like Al Ahly for a significant period already. So I could see him potentially going there.
Turkey than Greece. I think Turkey would be more good, to be honest.
Yeah, I think League One, I think, I don't know. I'm not too sure if you would take that gamble. You know, maybe he would take the gamble, you know, if he was given the opportunity. But, you know, France football in general this season, I don't know if you guys have followed, have had a lot of problems off the field specifically.
Right. Did you see what happened? It's an Etienne match.
Yeah, you know, they've got a lot of problems themselves. Those smaller nations, you know, France, you know, barring France, have a lot of issues themselves. So I don't know. I think I don't know if those teams would take a gamble on. Is it a gamble? I don't know. on a Peter Musumane, but I think that would definitely be his next step. I don't see him coming home to South Africa. I think he can also see the disorganization within our football at probably 80% of our clubs. You know, two of the three biggest clubs in South African football finished outside of the top four. You know, that's none of them are going to be in Africa next year. So it just sort of proves to you that we are quite far behind.
Claudio, what do you think?
I think Peter would take the United job if he was offered it. I don't think the man is shy of opportunity, and he would never say no. But I do think, I like what Nick touched on, the sort of Turkish league. I think moving from a club like Al Ahly to, say, Fenerbahce, where the Turks and the Egyptians, they were like the same sort of passion for the teams. I think that would be a nice fit for him. And then obviously if he gets success there, then you're really making waves because people start looking. I think when we're looking at a lot of the young Portuguese coaches, they tend to go out there and they try and get success and then they come back, largely because of the Mourinho Association and Portuguese sort of football knowledge, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think that would be the worst move for him. So, yeah, I think, Nick, you hit the nail on the head there, sir.
Pums is saying Scotland or Belgium. That could be a decent shout. I think a Belgium league also could be a decent shout. Maybe a team in the top three or four. Anderlecht is probably going to be looking for a new manager with the rumours of Vincent Kompany going to Burnley. So
I think the weather's too cold for pizza there, man.
The problem in Scotland, though, is if you're not within the top two, you're not going to achieve success. And I don't see Van Bronckhorst or what's his name?
The Aussie coach, Costa. He's got a European surname.
He's got a Greek surname, yeah. I don't see them leaving anytime soon, but you know, football can change very quickly.
No, definitely. Just before we do wrap up, guys, something that I probably added onto the show while we're on the show. There is a little match happening tomorrow, guys, called the Finalissima. Between Argentina and Italy, which is the champions of the Copa America versus the champions of the European Championships. They're playing a match tomorrow at Wembley Stadium. A beautiful trophy, I might add. That's something that strikes me. I just want to get a predictions. So if you guys aren't doing anything to watch the game, it's that season now where we don't know what to watch, guys. So this might be something at least decent to watch, you know, see Messi on the field.
Well, there's a lot of Nations League football. I think England,
on the weekend.
I know I was just in now, they've got 4 games in 10 days, before the holidays, so for their holidays and their break. So there's an important World Cup qualifier with Scotland playing Ukraine tomorrow.
Ukraine, yeah.
And then the winner of that plays against Gareth Bale's Wales. That will be the final sort of slot going into the World Cup. So, yeah, I think we've got 2 weeks left of some competitive football and then a little bit of a break.
Do we really care about a team that didn't even qualify for the World Cup, Wonga? Do we care about that?
I don't know.
Do we care about a team who didn't qualify for the Champions League when they were in the Champions League spot for the last 4 or 5 weeks?
So apparently we don't care about this match, but since Nick's got some Scottish blood in him, prediction for Scotland versus Ukraine?
I think the whole world wants Ukraine to win and qualify for the World Cup, but unfortunately Scotland are going to have too much for them, and it's going to be a 2-0 victory for Scotland.
Claudio, your prediction?
Yeah, I think Andy Robertson's going to lead the boys there with Scotty McTominay. The Scots are going to get it across the line.
Yeah. Che Adams up front, big Che Adams.
Isn't McGinn as well?
Yeah. McGinn's in the midfield. Billy Gilmore's in the midfield.
In the mix, boy.
In the midfield, they got a decent side.
The only one they're missing is Tierney, which is a bit of a loss. But they'll be okay.
Big loss. Wonga, what do you think is going to happen here between Scotland and Ukraine?
I agree with Nick. Couldn't be 3-0. Answer 3.
3-0, guys. I think Ukraine are going to cause an upset, guys. It's going to be a 2-1 victory. Guys, you guys are playing with some other type of passion, but we'll see. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Guys, thank you for another amazing show tonight. Just final thoughts, Wonga, then Nick.
What is my final thought? The mine was going back to the Benzema incident, offside incident. I just I don't know, it's the first time I came across that rule, and I think it doesn't make sense to me.
But you know that Wonga, you know that if it was just because of a small margin where the second last defender was making him offside, if that second last defender was the other side, it was going to be a goal.
Yes, no. I understand that. I'm talking about the it's him being offside. That he's only offside because it deflects. Do you get what I'm saying? It's, obviously, yes, it's past the line, and the fact that they say that was it Fabinho, whoever that last deflection came off.
Yeah.
It deflected off Benzema. It wasn't an intentional pass, and that's why he's offside. That doesn't make sense to me. If you look at it in a way, if you read it, it's assisting the team that actually makes the mistake. It's an assisting a mistake, and I can't understand.
Yeah. But it has to be whatever. Intentional, Wonga. The pass has to be intentional. It has to be an intentional action from the opposition team. The pass initially was made by a Real Madrid player, and it deflected off someone.
The Real Madrid player is shooting for goal. It hits two players now. Yeah, it's two Liverpool players,
He makes a deliberate action. He makes a deliberate action by taking the shot. But the Liverpool players didn't make a deliberate action. If they made a deliberate action and Fabinho or whoever it is trying to pass back to the goalkeeper and doesn't see Benzema there, then
I think we need a whole show on the rules of the game so we can unpack it properly, because Nick is already bringing in some interesting terms there, obviously some actions and or non-actions, and
yes.
was he playing for the ball?
I see what Nick is saying, but I don't go over, but I see.
Final thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, I think what was quite interesting, Claudio, that we spoke about Emma Hayes last week, Thursday, interesting takes, but we sort of predicted it, Claudio. Crawley Town inquired about her services. They decided not to go with her. There was a big debate today on Talk Sports. Simon Jordan.
So people do listen to our show then, Nick.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I think a lot of people suggesting that if she's good enough, she should be given the chance. Simon Jordan categorically says it's completely two different levels and people are selected based on credentials. So that was quite interesting.
That comment is masking what you mentioned in the show.
If you look at it, Claudio, from my perspective, I tend to agree. She plays in front of 4,000 fans. She's got players on a fraction of a salary.
So let's not give you a potential job somewhere in a step up because of the same thing. Even though you know your theory,
Claudio, I'm not saying that it's right, but is society ready for it? That was what I said last week. Society's not ready for it.
Guys, we're gonna turn Golange into a football club, so Emma Hayes can run our football club.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but is any sport as progressive as that right now? Any sport in the world?
Yeah, guys. I want. You know,
is there a cricket coach? Is there a rugby coach?
Listen, guys. In the NBA, San Antonio Spurs had Becky Hammon as a coach, right? So she was an assistant coach initially, right? And then something happened to the coach, and then she stepped in as the coach, right? So the NBA is one league. I've seen it, but I think Nick's suggestion, Claudio, that she should form a part of a technical team was a step in the right direction, right? Yeah. I know, obviously, maybe the step that we want is for her to be actually given an opportunity, even if it's in the League 2, League 1, Championship, Premier League, wherever she gets the opportunity. But I think the first step that the clubs need to take, wherever they're taking it, right? I'm just saying in the Premier League, for instance, I'm just making the Premier League example, is to include someone who they feel is good enough to get the credentials, right?
Imagine Tuchel gets sacked and they hire Emma Hayes and she fails miserably. No, but imagine she fails miserably. Imagine the abuse she's going to get from the fans in the society of today's day and age. Imagine the abuse. That's all I'm saying.
What I would like is, if that is the case and she gets offered the opportunity, that it's hers to turn down. It is firstly hers that they get get offered. And then if she's going to think like that, then it's hers to turn down. But I'm telling you now, someone like that would not turn that down despite the potential consequence of people turning on her. For me, I just think it's an interesting one where you're taking – I'm looking at the individual. I'm looking at what she's achieved. And I'm looking at the fact that someone like this has a master's degree in psychology. So there's a certain level of understanding with knowing how to manage players, I would like to think. How many people, especially within football, have a master's degree in anything? Firstly. Then secondly, you're going, this woman's done this. She's stuck with coaching. She's got the sort of expertise. If you've got that sort of nous in order to solve problems, surely then you would be able to handle something like that. Obviously, experience versus theory is something different, but the experience is there. I just think the opportunity should be given at some stage. And to your point, I don't think you've disputed any of this. I don't think anyone has. You've touched on some interesting things. I just think it's maybe American sports is the way for her to go. Maybe a potential head coach job in the MLS.
Apparently Tuchel really, really likes her. And I wouldn't be surprised if this debate sort of wrangles on for the next couple of months and you might find her on the bench. I honestly wouldn't be surprised.
I think we need to definitely move in that direction. You know what I mean? I think it's a move that, you know, when it's something obviously that's coming about where now obviously we're getting officials in the males game, females reffing males games. You know, even AFCON had a female referee, you know what I mean, and she did very well the two games that she reffed, you know. So obviously they already headed in that direction, and I think obviously now we're gonna get into the coaching part, which is obviously the next part, because officiating has already been done. Now it's gonna be the coaching part. But yeah, I think we can obviously talk about that and on and on and on. Claudio, final thoughts on your side before we do wrap up?
I'm looking forward to Thursday's show. We're going to be looking back at our predictions for the season, and we're going to see how close we all got. So, look at that.
Perfect. I just want to say thanks to everyone in the comment section. Firstly, I want to say thanks to Sam. I didn't forget your name. Pum, Ubi, Jason, Warren. I also saw someone from what's this, Twitch, Tiku, saying go on you Spurs. So that's a Spurs fan there in the comment section, and Aman as well did obviously make a bit of a feature, and then Louis as well at the start. Thanks a lot for tuning in, guys. This show wouldn't be what it is without you guys, and yeah, remember to like, subscribe and share the channel. We're almost at 1,000 subscribers now, guys. We had about 857 subscribers. Just keep on subscribing. Share
Wait,
with your friends.
Silo, I want to show you. I nearly had a heart attack earlier, and I want to show everyone why. I'm just going to share my screen quickly. Let's just check this out. Silo, but you can keep saying the good things. You're doing a great job, sir.
Listen to this guy. You know, messed up my channel of thought. My channel of thought.
I'm so sorry. I want to show you this. You mentioned subscribers and followers and stuff. Check this out. Hold on. So I was just, there was a glitch. And look at that. Look what it says there.
I can't see. Zoom in.
Yes. Yeah, even if I squint and grow another eye, I will be able to see that. Okay, now I can.
Talk Sport, 994,000.
There was some glitch. I go to the channel. I'm looking at it. I'm like, what the? And I was like, wait a minute. What's going on here? But I was like, sheepers. Where did that happen? I was like, who the heck did that? Anyway.
How did it merge with Alec? How was it a glitch with, and Talk Sport is as big as it is? So maybe if you go on their page now, it says Goal Lounge and it says 800 subscribers.
They're probably panicking.
Yeah.
You should reach out to them, Claudio, and just say, hey, listen, just punt us for a week there. Come on.
we should have one of them on the show.
Jordan.
Yeah, no, he's controversial. Yeah, we should have him. You'll get lots of views. But yeah, guys, thanks a lot for a great show, guys. If you don't know what to be,
be cool.
Be cool.
Cheers, guys.